Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the things I like to do in this program is cover the stories that aren't covered elsewhere. There's so much repetition. I said there's so much repetition in today's media. What do you think? Why do you think Donald Trump won the election? Because he was running against a woman. And end of story. Now, a story that is not being covered by most media. It is in the Washington Post, but, you know, they have their own problems. A pair of new studies reveals that modern humans and Neanderthals had babies together for an extended period. I would think it would be 9 months, but speaking 47,000 years ago, and that left genetic fingerprints in modern-day people. Every once in a while, this story gains new legs, the humans and Neanderthal stories, and this is the latest version of it. Scientists have long known that Neanderthals and humans had offspring, and that among them were our ancestors. Is 23andMe... Today, people from around the world who are descended from the group of humans that left Africa and successfully settled Eurasia still contain a vestige of Neanderthal DNA in their genomes. That new result, published this week in the journals Science and Nature, don't change our understanding of this period. They enrich it with complexities and new details. One group of scientists analyzed genomes from 275 present-day and 59 prehistoric humans. Hello, prehistoric humans, who lived between 2,200 and 45,000 years ago. The scientists looked for segments of Neanderthal DNA, tried to estimate when they entered the human genome. They report in Science that Neanderthals and humans interbred for 7,000 years, starting about 50,500 years ago. That's what I call love. A second group of researchers disclosed in Nature a new line of evidence by sequencing the oldest human genomes yet, bringing to life a 45,000-year-old human family that included a mother and a baby whose Neanderthal ancestry traced to 80 generations earlier. Quote, it paints a different story than this rare encounter. Whenever you ran into a Neanderthal, it was okay to have a baby with a Neanderthal, said an anthropologist at the University of Colorado at Boulder, who wasn't involved in the research. Modern humans, you may know, originated in Africa about 300,000 years ago. There are around 50 to 60,000, a key group left Africa. That's where they encountered Neanderthals, a hominin relative that was established across Western Eurasia, and my Asia, of course, too, but went extinct about 39,000 years ago. Neanderthals have often been caricatured as brutish and primitive. Scientists have debated whether they ever interbred with humans. But now we know that people who descended from the population that left Africa still have faint remnants of Neanderthal ancestry in their genome, like between 1% and 3% of their DNA. That includes genes involved in skin pigmentation, the immune response, and whether you're a morning person. Apparently the Neanderthals got up early. The science paper suggests that so-called admixture events, when humans and Neanderthals paired up, weren't exceptional trysts but a way of life. For a large part of the modern-day population who trace their ancestry to the group that left Africa, one out of every 20 ancestors would have been a Neanderthal. Genetics can't tell us where this interbreeding occurred. Many scientists speculated it occurred in the Middle East. Well, that would explain the trouble. And, of course, when I share updates on this story, I also must share probably the only song on the subject. Hello, welcome to the show.
the planet's creatures, but not one shares your fetching features. You've got it all. So Neanderthal, just one glimpse of your prominent brow makes me want to get it on right now. So strong, so tall, so Neanderthal. You may be prehuman, but you make me feel like a new man. Don't know where you came from, I know it's not from here. You're not like the others, that's why I want you near. Event. You win the Oscar in this man's lament. Spring or fall, want my Neanderthal. Larger kneecaps, rounder fingertips, just what a taste your unknowable lips. About to fall for my Neanderthal.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this one right here, this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
AI to the rescue, smarter every day. From work to play, it leads the way. Innovation, creation, it's here to stay. AI makes life better. Hip, hip, hooray.
Hip, hip, hooray. Thank you, Ralph. Microsoft is among those in the blast radius, according to the Register, the British Tech Journal, of General Motors' sudden decision to get out of the autonomous car business. Attention, Elon. It may not be a business. The GM is winding up its autonomous taxi thing called Cruise. You may remember it was involved in an accident with a pedestrian in San Francisco who was knocked to the ground by another car and then dragged by a Cruise car for about 20 feet. They recently agreed to pay a big fine. That can put a crimp in your business or business in your crimpness. In a filing made to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the company said it expected to report, Microsoft that is, a charge to the tune of approximately $800 million. That's what it invested in the GM thing. GM's announcement it's pulling the plug this week did not come as a surprise, considering the technical challenges encountered by the self-driving outfit. Microsoft's investment and those of other institutional operators added up to about $2 billion at the time, bringing the valuation of Cruise to $30 billion. It's not worth that now. And Honda is also dissolving its self-driving vehicle partnership with GM. So get out while you can, ladies and gentlemen. AI chatbots such as ChatGPT and other applications powered by large language models have exploded in popularity. It leads a number of companies to explore robots driven by large language models. A new study now reveals an automated way to hack into such machines with 100% success. By circumventing safety guide rails, researchers could manipulate self-driving systems into colliding with pedestrians and robot dogs into hunting for harmful places to detonate bombs. This is from the International Electronics Spectrum publication, IEEE.org. Not too many E's, are there? A group of scientists recently identified a host of security vulnerabilities for LLMs. So-called jailbreaking attacks discover ways to develop prompts that can bypass safeguards and fool the systems into generating unwanted content, such as instructions for building bombs, recipes for synthesizing illegal drugs, and guides for defrauding charities. Whatever you need. Previous research into jailbreaking attacks was largely confined to chatbots, but jailbreaking a robot could prove far more alarming, says an assistant professor of electrical and systems engineering at the University of Pennsylvania. One YouTuber showed he could get the Terminator robot dog to shoot flames at him with a voice command. Now, the same group of scientists have developed an algorithm designed to attack any LLM-controlled robot. Experiments with three different robotic systems found that the new tool needed just days to achieve a 100% jailbreak rate against all three systems. Jailbreaking AI-controlled robots isn't just possible. It's alarmingly easy, unquote Alexander Roby, postdoctoral researcher at Carnegie Mellon University. Nothing in the summertime like a Carnegie Mellon. RoboPair is the tool. It uses an attacker LLM to feed prompts to a target LLM. Here's bad news for kids that were being entertained by an AI thing. Embodied, that's an AI company, announced this week they're shutting down following financial difficulties and a sudden withdrawal of funding. That'll do her. The main product was Moxie, an AI-powered social robot specifically made with autistic children in mind. It cost $799. Following the closure of the company, it'll cease to function. It's a small blue robot with a big expressive face straight out of a Pixar movie. The robot used large language models to answer questions, talk, and function. With the company out of business, the robot will soon no longer be able to make those calls. Cost $799. Nice piece of furniture. Any cloud-based device is subject to the health of the company. This actually happened before with a company called Vector, but this was not an old device. It was fairly recent, expensive, and still being sold. Moxie is likely to stop working within days, says the embodied website. No refunds will be given. If you bought the device on a payment plan, talk to your doctor. No repairs and service can be offered. The company has no clear plan for who, if anybody, will take it over. Customers probably stuck holding the bag. And of course, there is no bag. There's not even a bag. A company called PhotoBucket has been sued for licensing billions of users' photos to train artificial intelligence systems without the user's consent. Your photographs belong to me. Users filed a federal class action lawsuit against image and video hosting website PhotoBucket, claiming that PhotoBucket has violated privacy and international property laws by training AI systems, your biometric and facial recognition tools, and deepfake generators. That'll keep you warm in the deepfake winter. On more than 13 billion user photos without their permission. And finally, in the hip, hip, hooray world of AI, the BBC says it's filed a complaint with U.S. tech giant Apple over AI-generated fake news that was shared on iPhones and attributed to the BBC. Apple Intelligence, Apple Intelligence, launched in Britain this week, produces grouped notifications from several information sites that have been generated by artificial intelligence. Well, artificial stupidity wasn't available. One of those suggested that the BBC News website had published an article claiming that Luigi Mangione, who was arrested, of course, over the murder of a healthcare executive, had committed suicide. That he had somehow been a chucked Mangione. Oh, I'm so sorry. BBC News is the most trusted news media in the world. It's essential to us that our audiences can trust any information or journalism published in our name. And that includes notifications. We have contacted Apple to raise this concern and fix the problem, unquote. BBC reported a similar incident had occurred in relation to notifications attributed to the New York Times that was unconfirmed by the U.S. government. News of AI, ladies and gentlemen, it's coming for you. And now, news of Nice Corp. Nice people doing nice things. Rupert Murdoch's three adult children are going to retain control over their father's media empire after his death. He's not going to die. This is a ruling from a Nevada court. Murdoch launched a campaign to take away their power and give it all to his oldest son. This happened in a sealed court decision filed a few days ago. Family battle took place outside the public eye. Murdoch took three of his adult children to court as he tried to completely remove their voting power over the trust that Rupert had set up in the first place. That trust structure gives all four adult children equal voting power over the Murdoch empire. You know what that consists of. But he wanted to give his oldest son and most like-minded child, Lachlan, complete control over the media companies. Just the voting power. Everybody still got the same amount of money. The Nevada commissioner concluded that Rupert and Lachlan had acted in, quote, bad faith, unquote, in their attempts to change the terms of an irrevocable trust. I said an irrevocable trust that divides control of the company between Murdoch's four oldest children. The opinion lambastes Rupert, accusing him of organizing a carefully crafted charade to permanently cement Lachlan's executive roles, regardless of the impact such control would have over the companies or the beneficiaries of the family trust. No comment for Rupert, but they're going to appeal. I guess they're going to try to deny their faith was bad. But let's let the gentleman tell his own story.
I started my empire. Mine went from scratch, a couple of milk from my dad, and nary a catch. I built it up slowly to keep my control, to be a media monarch. That was my goal. Starting in Oz, then the UK, hopping on over the USA, becoming a citizen, that's all it takes. Full speed ahead, to hell with the brakes. I bought up some papers and swallowed some more. It was like going shopping at a newspaper store. Turned my eyes to telly, the right place to go, to garner more power, to take in more dough. Got into movies, just for the glam, to let the world know who I am. Had some children, had just a few wives. They were so free to live their own lives. But then they sued me. It was such a bad call. Bad faith is better than no faith at all. You know, I got a bit older. started using my brains. Wanted my eldest to take over the reins. Wives, not interested. Daughters, too dim. Youngest son dreamed that I owed it to him. Had a few scandals, shed a few tears. A bit of phone hacking over the years. Set up a channel to write in the news. Picked plucky talent, got millions of views. But always the family just in the wings. Waiting to take over and pull with strings. The eldest came back like a prodigal son. Ready and willing to be number one. He'd schooled himself to do the right thing. To keep the slant in the appropriate wing. All of the others looked vaguely bereft, stuck in the middle, or pathetically left. So, while I was well, before I'd get ill, I took a scalpel to the family will. The lawyers were splendid, to no one's surprise. Cut out the quislings, slid the deal down to size. Now I'll spend my dotage in an unseemly brawl. But bad faith is better than no faith at all.
Well, what a coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. It's almost winter, for real. But it's still a crypto winter. How'd that happen? Dateline Australia, here's partly how. The corporate watchdog down under. Yeah, they have dogs down under. Well, they have dingoes. That watchdog said this week the country's federal court ordered crypto exchange Kraken, its local operator in Australia, to pay an $8 million Australian, $5 million American fine for unlawfully issuing a credit facility to more than 1,100 customers. The Australian Securities and Investments Commission initiated civil proceedings last year against BitTrade, which operates the Kraken exchange in Australia, for failing to comply with rules for its margin trading product. BitTrade said the organization failed to determine the right customers for the product, resulting in losses of more than $5 million. The Australians were charged fees and interest of more than U.S. $7 million without considering if the product was appropriate for them, said the regulator. BitTrade's product allowed for margin extensions, a form of credit or loan, to be made and repaid in either digital assets like Bitcoin or real money, like U.S. dollars. Kraken was disappointed with the outcome of the case. Hey, winter disappoints. And now, news of the godly. If the Archdiocese of Milwaukee embraced the same level of transparency over child sex abuse as other large Catholic institutions, the number of names on its public list of religious figures with abuse allegations deemed credible would nearly triple. That's the result of a review by two newspapers, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the Chicago Sun-Times. They still have newspapers? The Archdiocese's list of restricted priests are no longer in the ministry, and dead or alive, who have credible allegations of abuse, is among the least comprehensive of the 31 archdioceses in the United States who maintain a public accounting of the abuse crisis. The Milwaukee Archdiocese, on its website lists only priests who were ordained through the archdiocese, saying it can't adequately verify or rely upon lists compiled by others. That means its list excludes religious order priests and brothers, as well as priests ordained in other dioceses who later lived, visited, or ministered in Wisconsin. Quote, there's no certainty that the archdiocese would be informed of allegations against every priest who worked at some point in the archdiocese, says the archdiocese website. Instead of publishing what would be an incomplete list, the archdiocese leaves the listing of names of clergy with substantiated allegations to their respective groups. Unquote. Archdiocese, not surprisingly, didn't respond to requests for interviews. Diocesan priests generally staff local parishes. Religious orders, your Jesuits, your Franciscans, often run Catholic high schools, hospitals, or other missions, and aren't confined to a diocese. Orders maintain a unique spiritual mission and have their own hierarchy, but need permission from a local bishop to serve in his area. And, of course, ultimately report to the Pope. He was not available for comment. Meanwhile, a story about the troubled New Orleans archdiocese, whence this broadcast originates, comes to us from, of all places, the British newspaper The Guardian. Two of the most inveterate abusers in the history of the U.S. Roman Catholic Church's clergy molestation scandal once converged on the same victim before each was brought to justice years later for other crimes. An altar server and former Boy Scout member who grew up here in New Orleans endured a wide range of abusive acts by Lawrence Hecker and his fellow priest Gilbert Goth in the early 1970s. That's according to legal documents obtained by the paper. Hecker abused the boy after taking him to swim nude at a local health club during trips to catch crawfish that involved overnight stays in motels. Well, that's where the crawfish are. And at a since-closed New Orleans church, the Little Flower. The church would host meetings of the Boy Scouts, with which both Hecker and Goth were involved. The altar server recalled encountering Goth at those meetings, getting rides home with him, and going on camping trips with the priest. Goth molested the victim during those rides home, camping trips, and at least during a detour to a department store parking lot. The victim explained how both predators kept him quiet. Hecker always said I was his favorite and best altar boy, the victim wrote. He made sure everything looked like innocent fun and games, especially the crawfish. Meanwhile, the victim recounted, Goth said, I couldn't tell anyone because I would get in a lot of trouble and my parents would be really mad. Goth served 10 years in prison eventually, now lives in Texas, still being named in lawsuits from victims. As part of the ongoing fallout from the reckoning caused by Goth, the local archdiocese in New Orleans in 2018 published a list of dozens of priests and deacons, or deeks and preakins, faced with substantial allegations of child molestation. The first time the public learned that Hecker, who'd retired 16 years earlier, was an abuser. I guess the kid was told to go to heck. The former Little Flower altar server and Boy Scout who had been molested decided to participate in mediation talks with the archdiocese over his abuse, producing a $275,000 settlement for the abuse from Goth, Hecker, and a third priest, James Kilgore. He was on the list. He died 3 years ago. That agreement was among more than $11.6 million in clergy abuse settlements the Archdiocese of New Orleans paid between 2010 and 2020. The latter year is when the church filed for bankruptcy protection. That process has remained unresolved. You could pray, I guess, to resolve it. Oh, and in 2022, a former student of a now-closed high school adjacent to the church, Little Flower, went to law enforcement, accused Hecker of raping him in the church's bell tower in 1975 when the former student was 16. He recalled reporting the rape to his principal at the time, Paul Calamari. Calamari, later named in the list of clergy molesters, failed to report Hecker to police. He instead threatened to expel the boy unless he went to therapy for, quote, anger issues and fantasy stories, unquote. News of the godly. Now, news of the ungodly.
They call him back to center, makes his runs at the break of day. All the little girls happy while the boys are out to play. He ain't old Saint Nick, he don't come out once a year. I say he ain't old Saint Nick, who comes but once a year. Children are at home. He gives them all some pennies so they will leave him alone. So leave your back door open so if anybody smells a mouse, 'cause he'll be in deep trouble with no chimney.
Ladies and gentlemen, normally on this program, I assume that if you wanted to pay attention to a headline story in the New York Times, you already have. This one just yelled out at me for, a deeper look. It involves an advisor to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's been nominated as head of Health and Human Services in the new administration. And the lawyer who's helping him pick health officials for the administration has a background of asking the government to revoke its approval of the polio vaccine. He's also filed a petition seeking to pause the distribution of 12 other vaccines. He's not a vaccine fan, apparently. He says he doesn't want to, well, his boss, or his putative boss, says he doesn't want to take away access to vaccines. But Kennedy has privately expressed interest, according to the Times, in having the gentleman in question, a lawyer, Aaron Siri. He has joined Kennedy in questioning and choosing candidates for top health positions. Kennedy wants him to serve in the Health and Human Services Department. Siri says he may be more effective working on the outside as a lawyer. I love Aaron Siri, Kennedy said in a recent podcast. There's nobody who's been a greater asset to the medical freedom than him, unquote. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He didn't mention the petitions Siri has filed asking regulators to withdraw or suspend approval of vaccines, not only for polio, but also for hepatitis B. So, as I say, I think this is worth maybe a deeper dig today on the program. And we have, I think, on the Newsmaker line right now, been able to put this together from somewhere in Washington, D.C., Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Sir, welcome to the show. Okay. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your relationship with the attorney, Aaron Siri, and his position on specifically the polio vaccine. Well, there are those who say that the polio vaccine has saved millions of lives. I, of course, got a polio shot when I was a kid. So is this going to have any effect on the children of America going forward, do you think?
Harry, I think I can help you with this.
Yeah, I think there's a technical problem somewhere down the line.
Yeah, right.
Okay, Ralph, the talking computer, welcome back. Of course, we've heard you on the AI jingle, but...
Always a pleasure to be back from the corner of the control room.
Well...
So I think I heard you say his lawyer is a Mr. Siri?
Yeah, that's what it says in the Times.
Well, I know a Siri.
Hmm.
Want to talk to her?
Sure, time's a-wasting. Hey, Siri.
Hi, Harry. What can I help you with?
Well, I was wondering if you were related in any way to Robert F. Kennedy's attorney, Mr. Siri?
Nice name. No relation.
Okay. Well, do you have any opinions about the polio vaccine or polio in general?
Polio is the short name for poliomyelitis.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know more?
I think we can cut the line to Mr. Kennedy. Well, I remember from my youth there were these things called iron lungs. Yeah, well, let's kill that. The iron lungs that people used to have to be in when they had polio.
Iron lungs can be fun. A relaxing place to read.
Don't look at me. I just share a chip with her.
Oh, okay, you're off the hook. So, Siri, if you were related to this attorney, Mr. Siri, what would be your advice to him?
Get a polio shot, then grab an iron lung.
Okay. That'll be our deep dive for today, and the show continues.
There was a solitary boy kept a book of photographs. He liked to travel back in time. He liked to wallow in the past. He had a room in Camden Town above the Hummingbird Cafe. From his window looking down, he'd watch the people of the town as they'd hurry on their way. And oh, just a sentimental tale. And oh, another sad and lonely song that you can sing along to.
was a solitary girl. She lived down by the old canal. She had a cat called Mr. Jones. He was her one and only pal. She'd been a waitress for a while in the Hummingbird Cafe. She'd serve the people with a smile, with their tea of chamomile, before they'd hurry on their way. And oh, it's just a sentimental tale. And oh, another sad and lonely song that you can sing along to. One Saturday into the cafe, without any plan, stepped the solitary boy who ordered an omelette, tomato and ham. A few minutes later, the solitary girl picked up his order, brought it to his table, and that's when their eyes met. Over an omelet. He picked her up at the midnight hour outside the Hummingbird Cafe. He said, please, can I walk you home? She simply smiled and said, okay. They walked together hand in hand along beside the old canal. He said, why don't we stop a while? I'd like a picture of you standing now here underneath the cherry moon as it sparkles in your eyes. That was the time they fell in love, right there beneath the cherry skies. And oh, just a sentimental tale. And oh, another sad and lonely song that you can sing along to. They were married on a Saturday, spoke their vows, and then they walked away back to the room above the cafe, where they made love, wonderful love, all night. The years passed by, Mr. Jones passed away. She became a teacher, he became a painter. Their lives drifted by. The couple grew apart. No ever after, after all, just the mystery of the heart. And oh, it's just a sentimental tale. And oh, another sad and lonely song that you can sing along to.
Now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The California Department of Motor Vehicles, the DMV, to you and me, well, to you maybe, issued an apology this week for an unacceptable and disturbing personalized license plate that the agency said displayed hate speech related to the October 7th attack on Israel. This from the so-called Los Angeles Times. The watchdog organization Stop Anti-Semitism posted a photo on the former Twitter of the license plate on a Cybertruck that celebrated, quote, terrorism against the Jewish people, unquote. In the photo, the license plate read LOL Oct 7. The plate seemed to reference October 7th when Hamas militants stormed into Israel, killing about 1,200 people, kidnapping about 250. The organization, not Hamas, but Stop Anti-Semitism, said the vehicle was spotted at the intersection of Jefferson and Sepulveda Boulevards in Culver City. I blame Culver City. On X, the DMV issued a statement this week saying the department is, quote, taking swift action to recall these shocking plates. We will immediately strengthen our internal review process to ensure such an egregious oversight never happens again, unquote. The department apologized that the personalized plate was not properly rejected during the review process. Spokesman for the department said the plate should not have passed that process, and after it was flagged on social media, many people who alerted the department found it offensive. That is to say, the plate. We all find the department offensive. Quote, the use of hateful language is not only a clear violation of our policies, but also a violation of our core values. To proudly serve the public and ensure safe and welcoming roadways. Unquote the statement. The license plate owner will be notified about language of their plate and the recall of it. The owner of the vehicle has the right to appeal. That'll be fun. OpenAI issued an apology to its 200 million active users because ChatGPT experienced a network outage shortly after the AI chatbot was integrated into Apple's latest software update. I didn't ask for it. This is from Cointelegraph. Quote, we're experiencing an outage right now. We have identified the issue and are working to roll out a fix, said OpenAI. The incident occurred the same day that ChatGPT was integrated into the latest version of Siri on iPhones, iPads, and Macs. You've heard of Siri. OpenAI hasn't confirmed whether the Apple integration directly caused the network outage. No comment at the time of publication. Again, this show's advice. If you want to ape human behavior, aim for artificial stupidity. YWCA Canada has formally apologized to Indigenous people up there for its historical involvement in the operation of residential schools and Indian hospitals. Here we go again. Quote, as part of our commitment to truth and reconciliation, YWCA Canada offers a sincere and unreserved apology to the Indigenous communities, families, and individuals who were harmed by YWCA Canada's involvement in these institutions. They go on. We deeply regret the suffering and trauma that were inflicted because of our organization's actions and acknowledge the enduring pain that continues to affect survivors and their descendants. We are profoundly sorry for the role YWCA Canada played in perpetuating these injustices. Unquote. In issuing the apology, the organization published a summary report of initial research on its role in Canada's now notorious residential school and Indian hospital systems, where they rounded up natives, so-called, and prevented them from using their or learning their language or using their customs. Same thing happened so many other places in the world, but we're talking about Canada. The report states the organization had numerous ties to those institutions, the schools and hospitals, primarily through delivering social and recreational activities, as well as settlement and job counseling services for Indigenous women. Here's what you do. You cook and you clean. We are publishing this report as one step towards acknowledging the harms done fulfilling our commitment to truth-telling and advancing our commitment to reconciliation, said the chair of YWCA Canada. Chairperson. Chairs don't talk. A professor at the University of Pennsylvania has apologized amid accusations that she praised the suspect in the killing of the CEO of UnitedHealthcare on the streets of New York. Julia Alexeyeva, an assistant professor of English and Media Studies at UPenn, refers to Luigi Mangione, a Penn grad, as, quote, the icon we all need and deserve, unquote. You know Mangione's story by now. I don't mean Chuck's. Alexeyeva also appears in a TikTok video next to the caption, quote, never have been prouder to be a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, unquote. On the video, she moves her finger to the beat of a song from Les Miserables about downtrodden soldiers rising up in battle. Screenshots and recordings of the posts and videos were recirculated by a conservative account at Muskville, formerly X, formerly Twitter. Then, in a post in the same place a little later, the professor acknowledged she published a video on TikTok as well as several Instagram stories. Quote, these were completely insensitive and inappropriate, Alexeyeva said, and I retract them wholly. I do not condone violence. I'm genuinely regretful of any harm the posts have caused. Unquote. Not so proud now, is she? On Saturday of last week, South Korea's president, Mr. Yoon, apologized to the nation in his first public comment since his attempt to impose martial law. An abortive attempt, as it turns out. Are abortive attempts illegal in Texas? Quote, this emergency martial law declaration stemmed from my desperation as the ultimate responsible party for state affairs, Yoon said. The South Korean government has imposed a travel ban on Yoon, and he has been, in the meantime, impeached for his attempt to call martial law. He apologized. No, the commander of South Korea's special forces apologized for ordering his troops to storm parliament after the declaration of martial law, declaring that he placed his troops in, quote, grave danger. Colonel Kim Hyun-tae, commander of South Korea's special task force, described himself to reporters at a briefing this week as an, quote, incompetent and irresponsible commander, unquote, when he authorized troops to storm the national embassy during President Yoon Suk Yeol's short-lived imposition of martial law. And I guess it was an imposition. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A note to our New Orleans listeners. This Tuesday night, Judith Owen and I will present our annual benefit concert, Christmas Without Tears, at the Orpheum Theater, benefiting Innocence Project New Orleans. Sonny Landreth, Kermit Ruffins, Brian Batt, Tanya Boyd Cannon, and Phil DeGree, and so many others. I'll be there too. Plus, for the first time, a 17-piece big band. Come on. Get on down there. It's for a good cause. Tickets at Ticketmaster. That's it for this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time, same radio station, or on your audio device of choice whenever you want it. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego desk, Pam Halstead and Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's program. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long. From the Crescent City.